Blog Talk Radio.
The clock goes tick-tock, your heartbeat tips up. You know there's something greater you're called to be. You shut tight your eyes and breathe in.
I wish I could play that whole song for you guys, but it's like 3.5 minutes long, and you just don't do that for an opening for a show. It is such a great song. The world is waiting for you. That's what it's all about. Faith Rivera, wonderful singer, wonderful friend. Check her out, faithrivera.com. This is Lisa Bonice, back with another episode of Shapeshifting. As those of you who are regular listeners know, used to do the show every single week, and got to be a little much to do, but now I do special shows, and tonight is a special show. My guest tonight is an author named Amy Spencer, who has written a really kick-ass book. It's called Meeting Your Half-Orange, and again, those of you who listen to this show, you know the material, you know the shape-shifting thing is all about the whole body, mind, spirit, weight issues. Now, I don't want to say weight loss because that's not necessarily about it. It's about getting your body into its healthiest, most vibrant form possible by living your most authentic, vibrant life, and then it, of course, reflects in your body. Well, Amy's book, Meeting Your Half-Orange, is exactly the same, only completely different. She takes the same principles but relates it to your love life, your dating life, your wish to attract your soulmate, and I am just loving her book. I really, really enjoy it a lot. Amy's got lots of experience. Let me give you just a quick rundown of what she's done in the past. She spent a decade working as an editor for Maxim, Glamour, and Star magazines. She's worked with InStyle, Harper's Bazaar, Glamour, Match.com, Cosmo. She also hosted a call-in relationship advice show called Sex Files on Sirius Radio. She's done, gosh, just about everything you can possibly even imagine, and I'm going to bring her on in just a sec. Let me tell you how I met Amy. This is, I love these synchronicity stories because, you know, that's what it's all about, is just things sort of interestingly falling into place. Amy and I both belong to the when you're an author or a radio host, whatever, when you're in this industry, I'm using my little finger quotes, when you're in the industry, you subscribe to mailing lists where it tells you where, you know, reporters or whatever are looking for certain kind of guests or certain kind of stories. And, you know, so you read these things to see if you make a fit. And Amy was looking for people who have interesting stories about meeting their soulmates, their life partners, whatever you want to call it, whatever word you're most comfortable with sort of a law of attraction type bent to the story. And I went, you know what? I have got the greatest story in the world. Turns out, reading her book, it's not the greatest story in the world. It's one of the greatest stories, but her book is just full of amazing stories of how people have met the person they're supposed to be with this time around. And so anyway, I emailed her with my story, and it's in the book. So hooray! That's kind of fun and exciting. So we'll probably be talking about that a little bit later on. We'll be taking your questions in the chat room, maybe even take a couple phone calls later on in the show. And you know what? I think I've probably babbled just about enough. Let me see if I can get this. You know how Blog Talk Radio is goofy. Okay, here we are. I think we got the unmute button there. Amy, you there?
I'm here.
Wonderful. The BTR switchboard is working tonight.
Yay. And there's no such thing as you talking so much. I almost got so lulled into listening, I forgot I had to join you. But I'm pleased to.
It's so wonderful to finally be doing this. I've been reading the book and just going, God, I'm so excited for you. I hope everybody listening tonight and everybody, even who's not listening, somehow that this gets out there, you know, through osmosis just to the world, that everybody buys a copy of your book, because it's just so, it's so happy and optimistic and practical, and it's just really, I love it. I love it. It's a wonderful book.
I'm so happy, and I'm so happy you're a star in the book. You know that we're in this together now, Lisa.
That's right. That's right. Our destinies are tied to each
exactly.
Other. Yeah. Now, you have, we'll go through, you've got like four different websites, different URLs. We'll do them throughout the show so people know, but one of them is datingoptimist.com?
Thedatingoptimist.com, yes.
Thedatingoptimist.com. Okay, so why don't you tell us all, what exactly do you mean by the dating optimist?
Well, it's basically my attitude about dating and love that I'm trying to pass on. So I am one dating optimist, and I would like others to be dating optimists. Because the way I see it, you know, the right attitude going into dating and about yourself is everything. And that's basically
right.
the essence of what dating optimism is. And as you just explained in your intro there, you know, I believe that by becoming so determined to end up in a great relationship and so authentically happy in your own skin, you naturally draw the right person straight to you.
Right, right.
So
well,
that's what I'm all about.
Yeah, if you're not authentic now, you're going to be attracting somebody who's attracted to the non-authentic you, and then you're sort of stuck either pretending you're somebody you're not or in a relationship where the person goes, you know, you're not the same person I met.
Exactly,
so.
Exactly. If everyone just learns to really embrace who they are, you know,
right.
we really help ourselves along the process of both people ending up in really happy, healthy relationships.
Right, right. And
yeah.
that's really what a lot of the whole book is about. I mean, it sounds like kind of a no-brainer, but, you know, when it comes down to actual real life of actually doing it, it's really not as easy as it sounds, is it?
Well, yeah, you know, it does require extra focus. You know, it's not as easy. I know a lot of people will say, like, isn't it true that as soon as you're not looking, that's when love lands in your lap? And it's like, well, sure, there's an element of that. You know, no single person wants to think about that. Like, well, so if I am looking, I'm never going to meet them?
Exactly.
You know, it's kind of depressing.
Yeah.
So, you know, there is an element that, no, I don't think that it's just that you sit back and wait for someone to land on your lap. What, you know, what's involved is you becoming truly happy and doing the things that make you happy, which, by the way,
right.
is not always dating, because sometimes dating
right.
makes you miserable. So,
yeah.
you know, sometimes I actually am a proponent of taking some time off.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, and really focusing on what you're looking for in the right person,
right.
you know, the right things. So there's a
yeah.
little effort there, but it's the effort of sort of your emotions and your gut and your soul, not this, you know, treat dating like it's a 24-hour job or a business interview.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
It's
and
work.
Yeah, exactly. And learning how to enjoy life without that certain someone so that you know how to enjoy life when you do meet them.
Exactly, exactly.
Or her, you know, I think we're both going to probably, let's just do this disclaimer right now. We're just going to use the generic her meeting him just because it's shorthand and it's easier. But
exactly,
you know,
yeah, and I say that in the beginning of the book. I am
right.
certainly all for everybody finding love, but it gets really complicated if you spend the whole book or the whole conversation trying to say him and her and him or her and her.
Exactly.
So, yeah,
yeah,
everyone deserves love. Everyone deserves a great partner.
So we're talking to all of y'all out there.
Exactly.
So. Now, let's explain what you're talking about, meet your half-orange.
Right, yes, the very intriguing half-orange concept that not everyone knows what it means. What
right.
it is technically a translation of a Spanish term, mi media naranja, which means my half-orange, that's how it's translated, but it's come to mean my sweetheart, my other half. And it's a term that I learned from my husband's family, who is in Argentina, and I thought, what a great image, you know? It's a picture of these two half-oranges, sort of meet in the middle, even Steven, you know, really happy, and create this full, round, sweet relationship. So
yeah,
that's what I want everyone to find, you know, not somebody who, you know, completes you, but somebody who complements you and kind of creates this really nice, even, balanced relationship.
Yeah.
And
I
a
think
healthy
that's a
one.
Really,
a healthy one.
Yeah. That's. I think that's why what you just said about not somebody who completes you, because even though that was a romantic scene in the movie, oh, Tom Cruise said that. I mean,
right.
But really, that's kind of an unhealthy way of looking at it. So, yeah, I like the way that you're saying that instead of completing, you're actually complementing each other.
Yeah, and I know, you know, when you do fall in love and you're in those fluttery butterfly moments, it feels like someone completes you, and I think that's why people use the phrase. But,
right.
you know, when it comes to looking for somebody, that is not what you want to look for because that implies there's a hole or an emptiness inside of you that someone else has to fill. And
yeah.
as you and I both know, that's not what it's about. You know, it's about
no.
filling your own holes and feeling fulfilled as a person first, and then you can supply someone else with, you know, a great other half to a great relationship.
Right.
Yeah,
yeah. And one of the points that you make in the book, there's even a little headline at a chapter heading that says, you did it with your career and life, you can do it with love. And I think it's really important that if you feel confident about what you can do with your life, you know, you got this great career and you got everything going for you, the only thing that you feel sort of crippled in is your love life. It just kind of shows you that that's where you're a little bit skewed in your
yeah.
self-image.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, it's something, I mean, you probably come across the same thing as, you know, maybe with people in their health and their weight, that people feel like, oh, I can make my career happen. I mean, look what I've done. I've worked my way up the ladder. I've impressed all these bosses. I've gotten promotions. I've done all that because that was all in my hands. but gosh, when it comes to love, like, well, that's not my decision. I can't help anything about that. So, you know, I'm sort of putting it up to the universe to see what happens. But the fact is, you know, you can do, if you did it with your career, you can do it with love. Like, people don't realize how much control they have over bringing love to them. They think that it's just this lucky meteor happens to drop love in some people's laps, and that's just not true. You can go after it and get it the same way you went after and got your great career.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think the first the phase two, you call it in your book, I think the primary, it's a good thing that you're making this at the beginning of your process, is admitting that this is what you want.
Yes.
That
I know.
That is so huge. I mean,
I know. It sounds so obvious. I mean, even hearing you say it and people listening, they might think, of course you admit you want it.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, I mean, I don't know if you remember from your single days, when I was single, I had this big glitch in a way that when people would ask me, you know, are you happy being single? What's your single life like? I would say, oh, yeah, I love being single. And a lot of the time I did, you know, just to point that out. I did. I was enjoying my life a lot of the time. But there were many nights that I was going home lonely and feeling sad and feeling like I wished I had someone beside me. But I didn't
right.
want to say that out loud, because
right.
what I felt was there's nothing sorrier than a single girl who wishes she wasn't. You know?
I know,
and I could not bear the eyes on me, you know,
uh-huh.
the worry brows that I talk about in the book. Like, I couldn't bear one more, like, oh, poor thing, you'll find someone.
right. Or the people,
you know?
Like, kind of just, yeah, pitying you behind your back. And
yeah, I mean, pity, that's the worst. You know, you
yeah.
don't want people
yeah.
looking at you that way. So to counteract that, what I did was say, oh, I love being single. It's awesome. I have a great time. You know, nothing serious. I'm not looking to settle down. You know, and then I'd go home at night and think, all I want is to settle down. I don't want to be single anymore. And I realized, you know, I was basically canceling myself out. In one second,
exactly.
I was saying I loved being single. In another, I said I hated it. And the
yeah.
fact is, you can't have two things. You have to decide what you want. So it's all about admitting what you want. And
right.
in this case, just really saying out loud, I want love.
Right. And, you know, since my specialty is the whole weight thing, the similarity is when somebody who's heavy makes fun of themselves for being fat. You know, like, I know I'm fat, I'll make fun of myself before you can. And it's
right.
I think it's the same scenario where, you know, I'm single, I know I'm single, I love it, I will never admit that
right.
I want love, because, you know, that's, plus it's kind of hokey, and oh,
mm-hmm.
look, who wants to settle down and have babies, and
right,
you know,
you're
I mean,
so
like,
right.
Well, you also mentioned Sex and the City, and I want to talk about that. But, you know, Charlotte was always the one who got made fun of by the other girls.
She
who
did,
were
right? Everyone said, oh, romance, love, you know, you silly
yeah.
girl.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. And the rest of them were all, you know, out getting laid and all this kind of stuff. But they were just as miserable.
Right, exactly.
Charlotte was.
Exactly. But, yeah, and it's such an interesting point. I love the point you just made, that it is like, well, everyone's thinking, oh, look, she's single, as if it's like this big beacon, you know, blinking above your head. So I'm going to point it out first and take charge of it and talk about how much I love it. And guess
yeah.
what? If you're single and you love it, that's great. But
right.
the question is, if you're single and you want to be in a relationship, that's when you have to change what you're saying, and that's when you have to start admitting that you want a relationship, telling people you want a relationship, and getting on that course. Because what you say, as you know, Lisa, what you say is what you get.
Right. Absolutely. It absolutely is. And then, like I mentioned, the Sex and the City thing. I love that you brought this up, the Sex and the City problem that you say
right.
in the book, because we all loved that show.
Right.
Although, I'll tell you what, when Carrie dumped Aiden the second time, I stopped watching it. I was just like, my God, you had the perfect man. He couldn't be more gorgeous. He was everything you want in a man, and you dump him? So,
right,
yeah.
Right. I know. It was a complicated story. And, you know, I think part of the issue was that, you know, we were in this era and still are sort of lingering in the era of, you know, women taking charge of who they are, taking charge of their sex lives, having sex like a man, you know, going after what they want with nothing serious and no settling down allowed, because
right.
settling down with a man was somehow giving in or giving up, or, you know, not being a feminist or not being a strong woman.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
I think we all took those messages to heart, you know, and it was like, oh, sure, right, casual sex, that's what I'm supposed to do.
Yeah.
And, it, you know, people felt like they were less than if they admitted that they wanted a relationship.
Yeah.
And sometimes, like Charlotte, got made fun of for it.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Even when the girls would all go to their married friends' baby showers, you know, they hated it because the married women with the babies were boring and unhappy.
Right,
and, you know,
right.
they're out there with their Cosmos and having fun with their shoes and stuff. So, I mean, even on the show, all of the married women got made fun of. But in reality, they were all, you know, I mean, they all ended up with somebody, didn't they?
Right. Yeah, they did. They did. I mean, in the movie, they, you know, ended up with someone and then tracked back. But, yeah, it's this weird, weird, weird thing that women today feel like they're not supposed to admit they want a relationship. Because
right.
they feel like admitting they want a relationship is a sign that they're weak and
yeah.
that they're not independent. And what I'm saying is wanting a relationship with another human being is not weak. It's physiologically and emotionally natural. We all seek connection. We all want connection. We're healthy because of it. And a healthy relationship isn't about supporting your independence. It's about interdependence and learning to get along with another person. So each of you still feeling independent in your, you know, some area, but then working together partway through. So,
right.
you know, that's what a healthy relationship is. That's what a healthy business partnership is. That's how, you know, that's how love works and that's how life works. So
yeah.
it's not at all, you know, a weakness to declare that you want a healthy, happy relationship to enhance your life. And I just want more
right.
people to realize that and say, yeah, you know what? What the heck? I'm ready for my big relationship. And you,
yeah.
and when you say that to people, yes, you're going to get that little pity for a minute. And that's what happened to me. I had friends who said, oh, that's cute that you're going to find love finally. And, you know, I said it to once to every friend, and then no one sort of made fun of me or mocked me for it afterward. And next thing you know, 8 months later, I found my true love. So it was worth it. It was worth the pity for a minute.
Yeah. yeah. Look what you got in the end. Well,
exactly.
I think being truly ready for it. That's what my story was. I mean, I was single for 7 years. I got a divorce from, yeah, I married young. That's basically what happened there. I was very, way, way, way too young when I married the first time. And then after I got divorced, I was single for 7 years, deliberately and happily single, well,
right.
for the most part, because I really wanted to make sure that I had time to grow up. I, again, married young. I was sort of a case of arrested development when I got
right.
divorced. I needed time to grow up and to really know who I was. So, yeah, my time being single for the most part was a growing process, and I really did want to be single. But once I decided that, okay, I'm done, I have dated way too many losers, I know what I want, I know what I don't want, and as I tell in the book, that I just sort of declared, I was sitting in my bedroom one day, and I just, okay, I'm done, all right, bring him on, really, I'm finished with this whole thing, I'm ready for to you know, settle down with the right
yeah.
guy, with one that is going to be my, you know, for the rest of my life. I wanted a commitment. I was ready to settle down. And I'll go ahead and tell the story. This is,
please
I love
do.
It.
It's such a good story. It's such a
I
good
was,
story.
I was doing stand-up comedy at the time and living in Chicago. And after I made that declaration, 2 weeks later I was supposed to be in Detroit working. And a day or two after I made this announcement to the universe, I got a call from the club owner there in Detroit who said that the club had burned down. So, hey, guess who doesn't have a gig? And I just panicked because I was living paycheck to paycheck, and I couldn't afford to lose work. So I called every booking agent on the planet that I'd ever, ever talked to. And I finally landed a gig that week in Virginia Beach. So the next week came and went, and just as I was packing up and starting to get ready for this long drive to Virginia Beach, I got a call from that club owner, or from that booking agent, who said, you know, sorry to tell you this, but Hurricane Hugo has just washed out the club. Your gig is canceled. So
amazing.
Once again, panic sets in. I get on the phone again. I call all the same people, and they're like, look, I told you, that, you know, last week there's nothing available. So I ended up calling the club in my hometown where I started out doing comedy, and I talked to the club owner who was a friend of mine. I was like, please just let me come in for the weekend and MC. You don't have to pay for my hotel. I'll stay with my parents. Just, you know, toss me a couple bucks. Toss me a bone here. So I end up in town there. I got there on Friday. He didn't want me for Wednesday and Thursday. Just come in Friday and Saturday night. So come in on Friday. And right there, lo and behold, the feature act was the person that I am now married to 20 years later.
Oh, I just got chills.
But you know
so
what?
Good.
I forgot to tell you this part of the story. This is something I realized after I read it in the book. I went, oh, I forgot the creepiest part. I got there on Friday, as I just mentioned. If I had gotten there Wednesday, he would have been with another woman.
Really?
And I never,
wow.
Yeah, he was there with some other chick on Wednesday night, and I wouldn't have gone out with him because, you know, that's just kind of, you know, he was with someone else. I'm not
right,
going
right.
to go out with him 2 days later. So the fact that I came in on the weekend even made it that much more synchronistic and fun for me.
It's amazing, but I love it. I mean, the world was steering you straight to him. It really was.
Yeah.
There's something
yeah.
something nutty going on, and had you been there at any other day, at any mm-hmm. other time, it wouldn't have been right. So
right.
I love that. I mean, it's because I truly believe. I mean, the way that you declared it, you said to the world, I'm ready, bring them on. And
mm-hmm.
what, 2 weeks later, that's crazy.
I know. I was pretty amazed my own self. But like I said, when I sent you this story, I thought you were just going to be like, oh, my God, I've never heard a story like that in my life. But then I read your book, and it's filled with.
Yeah,
those
yeah, there's some incredible ones. I mean, yours is one of my favorites still just because it's, you know, come flood, come fire, come love.
It's natural disaster time.
yeah, natural disaster time.
Yeah,
there's a lot of great stories like this, and with so many people, it comes with different parts of the process, as you see in the book, you know, different phases through the process, people, you know, declaring what they want, admitting what they want, asking for what they want, being specific, making lists about what they want, mm-hmm. and each and every time, the right guy showing up at their doorstep.
Yeah, no, since you bring up making lists, you make a really excellent point in the book, too, about how we're sort of told in this, you know, sort of metaphysical realm of, you know, creating your reality to make the vision boards. And you do discuss making vision boards in the book. But you also make a really good point about being specific more about not what you want him to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you want him to be tall, dark, and handsome, but what you want the relationship to feel like.
Yeah, and this was something that once I realized what I was doing, it just sort of shocked me into a completely new mindset. And it's something I write about in Glamour magazine this month, actually, in the March issue. And it's a story about rewriting your love list, which is from the book. The idea is that so many of us, we make love, quote-unquote love lists, and whether we write them down or whether we have them in our mind, we have visions of who we think the right person for us is. And most often, it's a lot of physical things. It's what he or she looks like, it's the job they have, it's their sense of humor, it's how tall they are, a lot of physical things, and it's about the other person. And I'm saying, take that list, crumple it up, and throw it away. Because when you're focusing on the physical laundry list of someone else, you completely lose track of and can be distracted by it and forget what you're really looking for, which is a relationship. You don't want another person, you want a relationship. So what I suggest is to make a new love list, your big love list, that is basically all about how you want to feel in the right relationship, like you just said. So it's not that you want someone who's tall, dark, and handsome. It's that you want someone you're madly attracted to. And we were talking about Charlotte in Sex and the City. I mean, you see who she ended up with, Harry.
Right,
a lot of
yeah.
people were like, oh, my God, this, like, short, bald guy with a hairy back. You know, they've clustered all that fake hair on his back to make him as unattractive as possible. But it wasn't that she was settling by choosing him. It was that she was madly, wildly attracted to him and felt so
right.
comfortable with him and so happy and loved and inspired and connected to him that she couldn't help but be with him. So it's all about that. It's how you want to feel when you're with them. Madly attracted to them, laughing together, intellectually inspired, you know, that whole list. How do you want to feel when you're with them? And once you make that list, it's amazing how it changes your entire dating experience. Because,
right.
you no longer walk into a friend's party or an event and scan the crowd for what you think the right person's supposed to look like. You scan the crowd and think, wow, who knows who's in here? Let me start talking to some people and see how we connect.
Yeah.
It opens your whole world up in this brand new way. And it's not about, like, let's settle for the ugliest person I can find in this room and, you know, see if I can be attracted to them. It's
right.
not about that. It's that you might be attracted to them by talking to them. And that's the fun of finding out.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, like with Jeff, he's not at all my type. Well, he is now, but at the time, I mean, he dressed horribly. I hated his clothes, and you know, I mean, he was a nice guy. He was fun to be friends with, and I hung around with him. But that's actually what it turned out to be, is that we had so much fun that weekend, like friends, that you know,
right.
I could say anything I wanted to him. I didn't have to be on my guard. I didn't have to pretend. I didn't have to flirt. I didn't have to try to be sexy. I just,
right.
you know, I was just myself. And he laughed at my stupid jokes, and I laughed
right.
at his jokes.
No, they're not stupid.
They were stupid.
Right,
no,
right,
I mean,
right.
not on stage. Those were very polished and honed. But, you know,
right.
the stupid ones you make, you know, off the cuff. We got along just really, really well, and I just realized, you know, I feel so comfortable with him. But
right.
if I had been looking at his physical appearance, and especially the way he dressed, you know, he didn't have the baby face that I normally like, and he didn't have, you know, all the stuff that I looked for. But, again, here it is, you know.
Right. And, again, like you said, that what you looked for, you know, we're so used to looking at what we think we like or what we think our type should be. And my opinion, hearing so many people's love stories, is that we're kind of terrible judges of what we think is right for us, you know. There are
yeah.
people that we want or think we want, and then there are people that we need that are right for us. And it's amazing sometimes how it works that, you know, somebody who's like a crazy social butterfly, you know, thinks, oh, I want another social butterfly. But guess what? Two social butterflies together kind of, you know, turns into a disaster sometimes. And what you really need, maybe the social butterfly needs someone to calm them down a little bit. And, you know, it goes that way, that sometimes a little yin and yang can surprise you. So I think that it's about, you know, just getting rid of that list that you think you want and throw out that idea of who you imagine yourself to be with, because that's always physical. It's always, you know, we're always painting a picture of, you know, how tall they are and, you know, what they feel like standing next to us. And, you know, what you want is how you feel standing next to them.
Yeah.
So it changes everything. It's a really cool trick.
It really does. One of the other things I love that you mentioned in here is to ban the word just from your dictionary.
Yes.
That is so, it's so simple, yet so powerful.
It's so true. It's true in dating and love, and it's true in everything in life. I mean, it really is, because, you know, in dating and love, and specifically, it's that thing that people will say, and I used to say, you know, I just want somebody who will listen to me. I just want someone who's not a psychopath. You know, I just want somebody who has a job, right?
Right.
But what's interesting is, you know, using the word just is like trying to cut a deal. Like, you know, I'll take the bare minimum, the absolute least that I can possibly live with, and I'll just accept that. And then, of course, the fact is, you throw someone your way who's, you know, not a psychopath, who has a job and will listen to you, and they're not at all what you're looking for. So, you know, it's a funny thing. We do that because we're tired and we don't feel like we're going to get what we want, so we try to just ask for the minimum. But what I'm saying is, like, I don't care how tired you are, ask for it all. Ask for it all, and you're going to get a lot more.
Absolutely. Well, because you do deserve this. We have to allow ourselves to get what we really deserve, and that's a big word with a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. I know. People think that it's a lot to ask for, and it's sort of an issue. I talked about it in the book a little bit, an issue that for me I thought, well, I've got such great stuff going on in my life. I have a great family. I have great friends. I have a wonderful job. I feel like it's too much to ask. Like, I'm going to now have a great love in my life, too. Like, that's a lot.
Yeah.
You know, like, maybe I'm not meant to have one. It didn't seem fair, you know, too many good things.
And
you know, I realized that asking for a great love is not asking for too much, because you're asking for it for all the right reasons. Or we're hoping that you are, you know? And all the right reasons are that, you know, by being in love with someone and having this great connection, the two of you are even better, happier people. You're a stronger team. You kind of spread even more love and happiness to the world. And, you know, you're just a more powerful, better person because of it, if you're in the right relationship.
Right. It's not being selfish. It's actually
when your own
needs are met, you are so much more you're so much better equipped to help other people. So if you don't have your own, you know, it's that old adage where you're in the airplane and the oxygen mask comes down, you put your own on before you help somebody else. So
nothing
wrong. Yeah, nothing wrong with getting your own needs met.
Yeah.
So then for people who are listening to the show, those who haven't read the book yet, and I suggest everybody goes out and get it, and let's mention right now where they can get the book, Meeting Your Half Orange.
You can go to my website, meetingyourhalforange.com, and it will give you info there. But, of course, it's available in all the bookstores now, so Barnes & Noble, Borders, and Amazon.com, of course.
Oh, that's so cool.
I know.
So have you actually gone into the bookstore and seen it on the shelf yet?
I did. It was a big moment that first time. I was actually a little bit nervous walking in.
Uh-huh.
And I was staring at it, and the woman who worked at Barnes & Noble came over and said, and I mentioned to her, that's my book. And she said, well, let me have you sign a couple copies. So I went and signed a couple of the copies in a Santa Monica bookstore.
Oh, that's
so
fantastic.
It was a great first moment, seeing it on the shelves and signing them. So.
And it really, it's a gorgeous book. I love it. It's the cover is bright yellow with this sort of a metallic orange print. No, of course, it's got a dust jacket, but the book itself is a very pretty book, too.
Yeah,
so it's
and
nice
that big, juicy half orange on the cover, which just, you know, a lot of people say it makes them want to buy oranges. And what
it
I was
does.
Thinking was, what perfect timing. It's February. It's all the oranges are on sale right now. So so go ahead, buy your oranges, feel healthier, good for your body, good for your soul, and then your love will come.
That's right, and then read this book while you're drinking your orange juice.
Exactly.
But anyway, as I was saying, so once everybody here reads their book, they will know that the way to do this is, we've already talked about sort of setting up your goals, how you feel about who you want, what you want to feel like, and sort of getting your own ducks in a row and getting yourself, you know, prepared. So once you're in this space, once you've got this much done, you recommend that they plant their seed.
Right. Now, this is where the magic happens. Planting the seed is what's called the orange buzz that I've even been talking about now, that kind of I feel the orange buzz about the book. You know, there's this hum of happy energy that you want to create in your belly. And the way that I explain to do it is that you take that image or that list that you've made about how you want to feel in the right relationship, and that's what you're going to focus on. So maybe you pick the top three things that you want to feel. You want a partner who gets you. You know, you want to feel attracted to them, and you want to feel like you are intellectually inspired. So let's say those are your top three. So you think about those, you know, like how great it's going to feel when you have a partner who gets you, who's making you, you know, think about these smart things you haven't thought about in a while, and, you know, that you really want to kiss all the time. And you put together an image of that, and you picture yourselves wherever you want, maybe waking up in your bed on a Saturday morning, maybe standing on the beach near your house, you know, on a cold winter day. And you picture that and think, wow, how great is it going to feel when I'm standing next to my other half, my half orange, and, you know, he or she is looking me in the eyes and saying, like, wow, babe, I feel so lucky I met you. Like, how did I get to meet you? How did I get this lucky? And you start thinking about, like, how amazing that moment's going to be. And while you're doing that, there are two things I suggest you do. And one of them is just inhaling really deeply and slowly. And this is something that physically things are actually happening. You know, deep breathing actually cools down the emotional brain in your body. It gets your parasympathetic nervous system relaxing you, sends dopamine through your system. It kind of really just calms you down. And then while you're doing that, while you're taking your deep breath, you smile. And you make yourself smile, because sometimes you may not feel like it, but as a lot of research shows, when we're happy, we smile, sure, but when we smile, we actually change the chemicals going on in our body. The muscles in our face, by actually smiling, make us feel happier. So if you smile and you inhale deeply and you think about how great it's going to feel when you have this wonderful other half in your life standing next to you, if you do this for like 30 seconds, you just work up this hum of happiness I was talking about, just imagining how great it's going to feel. 30 seconds, once a day, twice a day even, maybe at night before you go to bed or in the morning. And what happens is you get this orange buzz, and it lasts. And you find yourself walking throughout the day kind of feeling brighter, feeling happier, and feeling, as one of my friends called it, like feeling like you're in love all day.
Right.
So essentially what you're doing is becoming the person now that you want to be in your relationship later. So instead of, you know, waiting to be happy and waiting to be on cloud nine later when you fall in love, you get yourself on cloud nine now. And that's what sort of draws people to you. That's what makes you notice people that you never noticed before. You know, it kind of changes your entire experience with dating. It's amazing.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's the orange buzz, and that's how planting the seed works. And, you know, that's what's going to sort of grow your half orange.
Yeah, and that's for anybody who's, you know, a fan of Abraham Hicks. I mean, everything that you're saying here is completely in line with everything that Abraham says, you know, with the whole law of attraction. I think they even say that 17 seconds is the bare minimum that you should do. And the longer, the more seconds you can actually maintain that, the more powerful. Sort of like, you know, an earthquake, if you have like a 3.0 earthquake, it's you know, kind of strong. You can feel it. But then if you have like a 3.1, that doesn't mean it's like 0.1% stronger. It means it's like exponentially larger.
Right.
So every second.
I've seen those charts, and I'm nervous.
Yeah.
I'm in California. I'm nervous.
We'll talk about the snow. How's that sound?
Yeah.
You're so right.
The longer you can do it.
Yeah, the longer you can do it, like you said, you sort of get this what you call the orange glow. And as you're talking about, I mean, I can even feel it my own self.
I was doing it myself. I felt it in my belly. And, you know, Elizabeth Gilbert in her book Eat, Pray, Love, she went to this one guy in, I believe it was Thailand, and he said at one point, I think he was sort of talking about this, but he said a great line to her, make your liver smile. And I think that's such a cool idea, because in a way it's almost like just picking an organ in your belly and trying to make it smile. You know, make your insides smile. And what I suggest by making your face actually smile and inhaling and exhaling, that's sort of a way to get your insides to smile. But whatever it takes to picture that and feel it, it's the emotional feeling that's going to help you make your change and make you feel so different. And that's no joke. It's real stuff.
No, it really isn't. And it really, just adding the smile is so much. There really is a lot of power in that.
Mm-hmm.
Because even if you're not doing this specific process, if you're just in regular life and you're just feeling kind of grumpy or whatever, you know, life is kind of sucking, and you just make your face smile. You don't even have to feel happy or do it. You just make the physical muscles in your face turn up so you're smiling, and you hold it there. It does change the way you feel. I've done this. It works. It's a very powerful extra step.
Now, you also mentioned
that being grateful is also a big part of this. And gratitude.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, gratitude for what you do have really does help to bring even more of what that is and then some.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, you know, people talk a lot these days about gratitude journals. And, you know, to be honest, I've never technically kept a gratitude journal, but I do it every day. And I think about it every day, all the things that I do have. And it's amazing what it will do, again, to your mood, to your energy. That's sort of the way I see when it comes to dating and love. That's where it will help you. Because for a lot of single people, and when I was single, it's so much about what you don't have. You spend so many days, you know, hauling the air conditioner up the stairs to put it into the wall thinking, oh, I don't have somebody to help me put it in. You know, just everything in your life, maybe, if you're, you know, depending on what stage you're in of wanting to be in a relationship. But there can be moments where you're just like, I don't have this. I don't have love. I don't have somebody to watch this movie with. And so you're focusing on the lack all the time, what you don't have.
Right.
And so the gratitude practice and thinking about, let me just make the list of what I do have. And sometimes the simplest things to be reminded of. I mean, do you have two legs that you can walk on? Because not everybody does, you know?
Right.
Do you have any family members alive who love you? Because not everybody does. You know, do you have friends? Do you have a job that sometimes at least makes you happy? You know, just going through the list, an apartment or a roof over your head, a home, a car. What do you have in your life? What have you accomplished? Where have you gotten yourself that you can be proud of and grateful for? And,
right.
You know, it really helps, I think, to put you in a place of realizing, you know, your life is not full of lack. There's a lot going on. It's a lot more full than you realize.
Yeah, and it also helps you to not only get into, but to maintain that feeling of my life is pretty good the way it is, which then attracts somebody else who's at the same resonance level, that their life is pretty good. So when you do come together, you've got two pretty good lives instead of two pretty screwed up lives, and you got to deal with each other's issues and stuff.
Yeah, yeah, it's so true. And, you know, here, it's an experiment that I did once. I don't talk about it in the book, but when I was sort of becoming a dating optimist, I realized that when, you know, you go through your daily life and people ask you, how are you? Most people say, I'm fine. I'm good. You know, maybe like, I'm okay. Thanks. But if you say to people, I'm great, it sort of changes the whole mood or the whole moment. Like, people are always really surprised if you answer the question, how are you doing? If you say, I'm great, people look and they go, you're great, huh? What? Why? What's great? What's going on? You can tell me more. There's something really enticing about it. And that, in a way, is what all this gratitude is about, you know, kind of getting to a place where you feel, you know what, I'm great. And when you walk into that date and your date asks you, how you doing tonight, you say, I'm great. You know, and the more you do it, it's sort of like, wait a minute, I want to be a part of this world. What does she have going on that's so great, you know? And guess what? You have a whole list.
Yeah. And, you know, for people like that, not even necessarily just dating, but just when you're in a room full of people, the people that you want to spend your time with aren't necessarily the really good-looking people. They're the people who just sort of have this inner glow where they're just fun to be around.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So,
I mean, that's the thing. People don't just want to be optimists. They want to date optimists. They want to be around people who make them feel better about themselves, who kind of remind them of all the good stuff that's going on in the world. So, yeah, it's true. Those are the people that are the most attractive, the ones who seem to be enjoying life.
Right, right. Yeah, that
simple,
whole
important.
Beauty is skin deep, you know, the that kind of thing. You know, when we're young, we're teenagers, we're surface beauty really is the, oh, he's so cute, oh, he's ugly, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And then you get to a point where, you know, maturity kicks in and you go, really, you know, there's just a little bit more to life.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, who do you want to be rocking in that chair with on the porch when you're 90 years old? You know, we've all done that with ourselves. Like, guess what? It's the person who's got a great attitude, who has a lot to talk about, and, you know, you have a great connection with.
Right, because beauty only lasts for, you know, a short time, and then, you know, you pass that I don't know when it hit you or if it even has, although you're gorgeous looking at your pictures. You know, eventually you're gonna lose those looks. You're gonna wanna be with somebody who's fun, who still does laugh at your jokes seven
years. Yeah, and you know, the fact is we've all known both sides of the equation. I mean, I know people who are just terribly good looking, and then when you speak to them they have a bad attitude or they're just, you know, really a little bit boring or you know, maybe negative or spiteful or something, and it's like, wow, you got ugly really fast. And then of course there's the people who, you know, who maybe aren't the you know, cover models for you know, Vogue, and you talk to them and there's something about them that is just so attractive. You want to be part of their lives. You want to just like climb inside of them. They're just so gorgeous.
Yeah, and the longer you get to know them, the better looking they even get.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Somebody wrote in the chat room here, beauty is skin deep, ugly goes all the way to the bone.
That's so true. Yeah, they always say that, don't they? At least, you know, if you're ugly inside, you can't fix it.
That's right. Well, another thing that you mentioned here in the book, I really love this idea under the heading, make room in your home and heart. You're talking about the feng shui of your own home, even something like redecorating your house. Go ahead and tell that. I love that.
Yeah, this was interesting. I was doing a story for a magazine, and it involved me doing a little feng shui research. And one of the things they talked about was having the art in your home reflect what it was that you wanted in your life. And when I looked into the love chapter, of course, as a single person, I always flip to the love chapter of every book. And I flipped to the love chapter, and what they asked was, do you have couple art in your home? And I was like, couple art? And I looked around, and all the art I had around the room was basically portraits or paintings or images of single women. And I have some of them in my office right now. Brigitte Bardot I had, Maria Callas, the opera singer I had. I had a painting that my sister had done of a woman lying in bed reading a book. And I looked around and just realized, like, my goodness. You know, I had these pictures up because I loved how strong and beautiful and smart the women looked.
Right.
And I realized, it wasn't reflecting back to me what I really wanted, which was a twosome, a couple.
So
there's this idea that what you want to do if you want a relationship is sort of remind yourself, sort of reflect back as often as possible what it is you're looking for. And that means, you know, putting things in sets of twos in your home, putting up art. I mean, I went and bought a photograph of a movie, A Man and a Woman, which is a man and a woman kissing. And I put that up in my living room and, you know, put out two candlesticks, put out, you know, the two lamps double, put out, you know, two little, you know, ducklings or something next to each other, whatever it is, sets of two. Because sort of unconsciously you're going to kind of pick this up and be reminded, like, yes, that's what I want, my other half. And it's sort of amazing. Once it got my mindset on it, it just helps remind you all the time that, you know, it takes your mind off single and alone and puts it back on what you're looking for.
Well, you also mentioned even just as far as getting some decent dishes in your kitchen.
Yes. Well, this is another thing. I mean, I know it sounds so nutty, but as a single person, there were so many things that I kept waiting to buy until I met my other half.
Right.
So it's sort of like, well, I'm not going to buy a nice couch now because at some point I'm going to meet my other half and we're going to buy a couch together, just like in the movies. And then we're going to, you know, paint during a montage. We're going to paint the living room and eat Chinese food. So I held off, you know, and I had kind of ratty dishes in my cupboard, and I had like one nice wine glass and then a bunch of, you know, dollar wine glasses from IKEA. And I thought, you know, gosh, look at what I'm doing. I'm putting my whole life on hold. I'm sort of indenturing myself to my future and not living up the life I have now, which is just silly. And so I started to go out and actually, you know, decorate my home the way I wanted it. And I bought myself some nice dishes, and I bought myself a bunch of nice wine glasses, enough for a person to bring home on a date if I wanted, you know, instead of just having one. And it's amazing, you know, like I sort of realized it's about, once again, just becoming your happiest, best self now, living the life now, becoming the woman now that you want to be in a relationship later. So don't hold off on that stuff. I mean, live it up now.
Yeah. And, you know, it can even sort of cross over into the whole nesting thing. You're creating your nest, which, you know, is something that people make fun of, too. But screw them.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? I would lay in bed at night and, you know, in a very healthy way, would picture, like, okay, my bed is really big and really comfy, and someday I'm going to have someone that I love in it to cuddle next to me in, and I can't wait. And I would picture that before I went to bed at night, and I would picture that in the morning and think, wow, one morning I'm going to wake up in this bed next to the man that I love. And I still have the same bed now, and guess what? I wake up next to it with the man that I love. So it works, you know?
Yeah. And then the heading of another one that I really like. It's actually right after the Make Room in Your Home and Heart. See the Sweetness in Other Couples. This one really is so powerful. Stop being jealous of people who are happy. You know, you see the couples in the park who are kissing, and you're like, oh, shut up.
I know, right? There's this, like, this little devil on your shoulder, like, ugh. I can't believe they have it. What made them so lucky to get it, you know? And then you start judging who they are, and they probably have bad things around them in their lives. I mean, you just start spitting hate at them because you're so jealous that they have the love that you want. And I used to do that, you know. It's almost embarrassing to say it. I feel mean saying it, but, you know, I don't think I ever said it out loud, but it's just that feeling you have, you know, like, I want that.
Yeah.
And so
did you ever
do that?
Well, I do that in all aspects of life. You know, I see a skinny woman, and I think, you little bitch.
Right.
Well,
right.
You know, she's not a bitch. She's thin. Or
right.
somebody who's driving a really expensive, nice car. You just sort of hate them. Well, because, you know, I wouldn't mind having a car like that. So it's almost like you prevent yourself from having those things because, you know, somebody else is going to be hating on you before long if you get them.
Right. No, that's so true. And it's true. We do that all through life. We do it all through life. It's like, yeah, not liking other people for having what you wish you could have.
Right.
And,
right.
you know, when it comes to love, it's a dangerous game. And so what I started to do and what helped me, and actually one particular woman that I know, it helped her, is every time you see a couple in love, instead of saying, ah, I can't believe they have what I don't have, you say, wow, that is awesome. If they can have that, then I can have it too. So you look at it as something to strengthen you rather than something that's taking away. I think I said in the book, it's kind of like you look at it as Popeye's spinach rather than Superman's kryptonite. It shouldn't weaken you and make you feel bad and down about yourself. It should actually build you up and just be more proof that it's out there.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
There's a question in the chat room here. It says from Monica, what if you're really attracted to someone who's not attracted to you in the least? That would make me doubt what I'm emoting.
That's an interesting question. I think it's a great question, really, because, I mean, this is what dating and love is all about, is this big back-and-forth confusion. You know, somebody likes you more than you like them and vice versa. What I say to people when they aren't sure kind of where they're at or how they should be feeling is, you know, I don't think she's necessarily emoting the wrong thing. It's just that this particular person isn't the one who's making her feel all the things that she wants to feel. So, you know, Monica, it's basically about, you know, if this person is not liking you back as much as you like them, and you don't feel like the adored, special, cared about, smart, sassy, sexy, cute person that you know you are, then they're just not the right person for you. But it doesn't mean, I don't think, that you're emoting some wrong thing. It just means that this one particular person is not the connection that's right for you, at least right now.
Right.
I mean, what do you think, Lisa?
Right,
what's your call?
Well, I think you're right, especially since you said at least right now. Because, I mean, there's even stories in your book about people who, you know, they hooked up with somebody and they thought, well, you know, this person's fun, but it doesn't work. And then a couple of years later, they meet again, and now it works.
Right.
So
I never want to close doors for people because I know so often doors don't get closed. I mean, people all the time come back around for second tries and third tries, and sometimes it works, you know.
Right,
it really is about timing. It really is about where each of you are in your life at that moment. And whether you're both open to the same thing at the same time. So just because someone right now isn't feeling the same way as you're feeling, it doesn't mean it's never going to happen. But it just means, you know what, do you want to stick around and just wait till they come around and start realizing what a fabulous, awesome person you are? I don't think so. I don't think it's worth waiting for. I think it's worth, you know, finding somebody who makes you feel that terrific. And if in the meantime the person that you like comes around, great. You know, maybe they are the one.
Right, right. Well, no, this is completely off topic, but it just came to me. I remember I wanted to ask you this. What do you think about the whole breaking up with a guy because he's just too nice? You see letters into Dear Abby where these guys write in saying, you know, I'm this wonderful guy, blah, 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 but girls keep breaking up because they say I'm too nice. What do you think of that?
I think it happens a lot. I think too much, and I feel bad for it. I think for a lot of women, when they're saying that a guy is too nice, it's not really what they mean. It's not that the guy is too nice, because nice is a wonderful thing, and we all deserve more of it.
Right.
What
I
think they're saying is he doesn't have any sex appeal. Like, I do not find him attractive. And and it's almost like the sugarcoating on it is to say, he's just too nice, you know?
Yeah.
And there's an element to it. Like, I don't know if you watch The Bachelor. I'm obsessed with The Bachelor. And do you watch it?
No, I've never seen it.
Oh, Lisa, it's so good.
Is it really?
Yeah, oh, it's amazing. It's amazing. Yeah, I love it. I've always loved it. Never missed a season. but this season, for instance, there's this man on the show named Jake, and when he first came on, I was sort of cringing a little bit because he's so awkward and so shy, but a super stud. I mean, he's got this great body. He's super good looking. You know, he looks like a Ken doll. He's an Air Force, an airline pilot. And, you know, his issue was that everyone always thought he was too nice, and girls kept breaking up with him because he was too nice. And when he first came on the show, you know, he's got this whole package, but he was, with each girl, he was being so sweet, and so it was just that his niceness was actually translating as awkwardness, you know?
Yeah.
So he would be sitting next to them and kind of flubbing and fluttering and didn't know what to say, that, you know, that it wasn't that he was too nice, it was that he was too meek and not putting off that sort of sex appeal.
Yeah.
Yeah, he had sort of a doormat quality. Well, of course, as the show's gone on, he's finally gotten some more confidence, and now he's like a super stud, and I adore him, you know, I'm really happy for him. So I think that's what's happening for a lot of people, is that girls who say, like, he's just too nice, there's no such thing as too nice. I mean, we all want as nice as possible. It's just what that, you know, it's what it's replacing. The nice is replacing the ability to be attracted to them.
Right, yeah.
So I mean, that's what I say to guys is, you know, get a little more confidence. A little more confidence, and you know, will make you seem a little bit sexier, and that's what they'll find more attractive.
Yeah, I always thought it just meant that they were a doormat, that, you know, they... And that's not even necessarily an insult. It just means, like you said, get a little more confidence. And you know, being too nice might mean that you let me walk all over you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you're so nice.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I remember I went out with one guy. He was Southern, and so he was all about being a gentleman. And he opened every door and pulled out every chair, and, you know, that was all terrific. But that sort of went through his entire being, that any time we talked about what should we do tonight, he was like, I don't care, whatever, whatever you want to do. Whatever makes you happy, you know, what do you want to order? I don't care, whatever you want, you know. And that, you know, he became less and less attractive every time he had no opinion and no confidence.
Right.
So it's important for guys and girls.
Yeah, because when you actually enter a relationship with somebody like that, if that becomes your habit, eventually you sort of lapse into this passive-aggressive thing where, you know, oh, I don't, you tell me what you want to do, and then you seethe inside because you're not getting your needs met because this person's getting their way all the time. It's
right.
Really,
oh, absolutely.
Off balance.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's something called, and I talk about in the book, the differentiation, which is sort of like an emotional process, like a personal growth process, and it's all about learning to say what it is that you want and say it, you know, with confidence and proudly. And once both partners are able to do that with each other, that's the way that you can communicate, that's the way you compromise, that's the way you work through issues in the relationship. But both people need to have a voice and speak it.
Right. Now, one of the things I want to make sure we get to, we've got about 7 minutes left, but I want to talk about what you call the grubby glow in this book. When I was still single, I can't tell you how many times this would happen. You'd go out with your girlfriends, you know, they'd call at the last minute, oh, let's just go out for a drink, let's just go, you know, do something. Oh, I don't have anything to wear, I haven't washed my hair today, I don't have makeup on, oh, who cares, let's just go. And you go out, and you're just having stupid fun with your stupid friends, and you're just laughing and having a great time. And you end up attracting so many different guys because you're just sort of being yourself instead of wearing the real high, you know, high heels and the really tight clothes that don't feel so good. And so, yeah, go into that. I love it.
It's amazing. I mean, it's basically what you just described. I call it the grubby glow. And what it is that I kind of ask the question, you know, there's two nights in this world. There's the night that you primp and do your hair and flat iron it and put on the cute shirt and the pump-up bra and the high heels, and you storm out that night with your glossy lipstick on and you look around the room. It's like, all right, who's gonna like me? Who wants me? Who wants me? And very often, you know, you don't get much out of it. And then there are the nights that you, like you said, you're hanging out with your friends, you go out for a stupid night, you throw your hair in a ponytail, and it's just like, oh, I'm not going to meet anybody. You throw on your Converse sneakers. And the next thing you know, there's guys all over you or somebody, you know, suddenly approaching you. And you think for a second, like, oh, my God, why is he approaching me? Look at me. What is he like in me? And what happens is it's not what you're wearing on the outside. It's what you're wearing on the inside that's making all the difference. And what you're wearing on the inside, the nights that you're actually looking a little grubby, is just an absolute calmness, a satisfaction with your life, a happiness. You know, you're enjoying your friends. You're enjoying the evening. You're enjoying the laughs. You're not looking over your friend's shoulders to scan who's coming in the front door because you don't feel like you look gorgeous. So why would you try to meet somebody on the night that you don't feel that great? And, of course, precisely because you're not on the prowl, people sort of see the real you, the authentic, natural you comes out. And that is
right.
So attractive. So attractive.
Yeah, absolutely. It's.
I mean, that's. I had a grubby glow on when I met my husband. I was hanging out with my family. You know, I'm not going to give away the ending, but it was one of these days, you know, hair up in a ponytail, like, you know, little sweater, jeans, flats, nothing, no makeup. And it's amazing what happens. There's a glow to you when you're just being your natural self.
Yeah, absolutely. That's, well, again, that's what the whole law of attraction thing is all about, that, you know, you're attracting what you're sending out. So if you're sending out that you're really comfortable in your own skin,
yeah.
And you're not trying to impress. I remember I was dating this one guy who I just thought was breathtaking. He was, I wanted to be his for the rest of my life. And we didn't really have much compatibility, but there was this chemistry. Let's talk about that real quick after I tell the story. There was this chemistry there. It was mostly just sexual attraction, but he asked me one day, he says, so what do you have to offer a relationship? And I went, what? And he said, well, do you cook? Do you clean? Do you sew? What? Gosh, is that what this is about? And suddenly the chemistry just wasn't quite so strong anymore.
Yeah.
So what do you think about chemistry, about, you know, where you feel like you're attracted to this person, but it turns out that he's really not the one?
Yeah, I mean, for me, we've all fallen prey to what you're talking about, the chemistry for their physical person, their physical being. And I know it happens, and chemically, physiologically, there are things going on and shooting through your body that make you think this is love, you know. But that, of course, is what we know as, you know, like the chemical lust. And
right.
I want people not to be fooled by that. But what I do believe in is a chemistry of your feelings, of your emotions, of your gut. Because I think that that's really important. I mean, that's the difference to me between settling and, you know, getting someone that feels really great, you know. A good guy is a good guy, and you can end up with a good guy that you feel about, or you can end up with a good guy that you just feel this emotional passion for. And whether it's a physical attraction or physical spark, I think there needs to be a spark of some kind. So I really think, you know, relationships are hopefully long and can be hard, and issues come up. And if you have that spark of some kind to keep rekindling and falling back on and reminding you why you're in this and why it's worth it, I think that's really, truly important.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, when you're talking about, you know, being in for the long haul, I think it's also important to know that when you're looking for a relationship, it is important to remember that once you are involved in a relationship, the honeymoon does eventually end, and that chemical glow does sort of wear off, but it gets replaced by, you know, sort of a calm.
Right.
That you don't expect. So when that does happen, it doesn't mean that the relationship is over. It means you stepped into, you know, a more mature version
right,
of that.
Right. It's sort of like passion changes, but it doesn't diminish. It just
right.
It's just different. And in fact, there were some studies done a few years ago. Dr. Helen Fisher, who is the cultural anthropologist, the author of Why We Love, she did some studies where she did fMRIs on couples on their brains and studied the neural activity going on. And one of the most fascinating ones was she did a study of couples that were brand new, lusty teenagers in love, and she compared them to the brain scans of couples who were married and in love for 20 years or more, and found that they had the same neural activity in their brains. So that the idea is that if you find true love that kind of goes deeper than just that chemical lust, you actually end up, when you think about your partner 20 years later, you can end up sort of with that same neural activity firing away in your brain as those young teenagers in love. So that's why I think it's really important, you know, like just settling for like, he's a nice guy, I guess maybe I should stick around. That's what you might be missing, is that 20 years from now you might not be able to recall that same fire and passion for them that you once had if you don't look for it in the beginning.
That's right. Okay, well, gosh, we are out of time. I knew this show was going to go fast because, I love this book. Everyone listening, please go out and buy Amy's book, Meeting Your Half Orange. It's wonderful. It's funny. It's friendly. It's a fun read. It's got a lot of really good advice. Webpage, meetingyourhalforange.com. Amy is also on Facebook and Twitter. You can follow her there, and you can find those links at your website, right?
Yep. Yeah, Twitter is twitter.com/datingoptimist. And, of course, the datingoptimist.com, where I offer like a dose of positivity every day or so.
There you go.
Yeah,
okay.
All about the dating optimism. I want everyone to learn it and be a part of it because it really can change your life. It really can.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you so much, Amy, for being
here
today.
Thank you, Lisa.
I really had a good time, and I hope you did, too.
I had a blast. Thank you, thank you.
You betcha. Thanks a lot.
Hello?